Welcome to Your Next Mission, the nation's number one video podcast on military transition and leadership. We tell the stories of those who served in the past and those who are serving today. From transition and financial wellness, VA benefits to mental health, we cover issues facing veterans, active military, and their families. Now, here's your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley.
Hello out there. Welcome to Your Next Mission video podcast. Memorial Day is a special day in America, a day when we honor both the contributions and sacrifices made by our service members and their families through the years. Today, we'll take a very personal look at Memorial Day through the eyes of a Vietnam veteran, a Marine who spent a lifetime dealing with the things he saw and had to do while fighting for our country. Men and women like him are what Memorial Day is all about. Before we get started, though, I personally want to thank our presenting sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, whose members are the mission, Purdue Global, where you can start your comeback, and USA, where we take care of our own. With additional sponsorship from Blue Cross Blue Shield FFP Dental and Blue Cross Blue Shield FFP Vision, together they make your next mission happen. They love our veterans and families, and I say every week we love them too. Today's guest is Esteban Valenzuela, founder of the law office of Esteban L. Valenzuela and Associates, and a fellow Vietnam veteran. Esteban, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you on the show. I love talking to Vietnam veterans because I'm one too, so I appreciate you taking the time to come on the show today. Hey, we have a lot to talk about. Before we get going any further, could you please take a minute or so and tell the audience just a little bit about yourself?
Sure, yeah. I was raised up in pretty rural country up here in Central Coast, California. Went to high school and here in San Luis Obispo, California. I was aware that the Vietnam War was going on. I had met a couple guys that had come back. I felt that my service might be helpful, so I joined the Marines in my senior year, end of my senior year of high school. Had a little bit of a delay program before I had to go into boot camp. I went to MCRD San Diego. I didn't think it was that bad. A lot of screaming and yelling and cussing and seemed kind of like home to me a little bit. So I was all right with it. You know, I was physically, I could do the physicalities and didn't have any problem there. To this day, I can remember my drill sergeant, Sergeant Kealoha. You know, somebody met like that, you never forget. Trained as well. I went straight to Camp Pendleton and near San Diego for basic infantry training following boot camp. And I was trained in weapons. I was sent to Vietnam. I think I arrived at the end of February, 66. My first deployment was at Chu Lai Air Base. I was there for a couple of months before I got shipped to my combat unit, 1st Battalion, 5th Marines, 1st Marine Division. I don't know exactly where they were. We went in by chopper around on some hill, and strewn around there was, 1st Marine Division, Bravo Company, and that's where I served the remainder of my tour, which was extended, actually, because of the Tet Offensive. With so many replacements coming in after Tet, I had to stay longer to help train, and that was the longest days of my life, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I don't know if I told you that before, but I was in the Tet Offensive too, and I was there 67 or 68, so yeah, I fought, when I got in the Tet Offensive, we was fighting down in Saigon through that area, so I remember that well. That was some tough time in Vietnam. Hey, when you enlisted, were you sent to Vietnam, did you have any idea what to expect when you got there?
No.
I mean, that's about me neither. Go ahead.
You know, in basic infantry training, we did some mock patrols and going into villages and acting like we were securing. One thing I remember from basic infantry, though, is that don't touch anything. When I went in, I was like playing around with some stuff, and they says, "You're dead." Like, what do you mean? You just touched that. That you just got a booby trap, man. They, you know, so it got stuck in my mind, you know. I never liked to fool around with any objects or even dead bodies because I thought they might be
booby trapped. Yeah.
Mind booby traps. Yeah. And that one thing that is sticking in my mind.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I tell everybody when I went to Vietnam, I went from 18 to 55 real quick. I grew up real fast. I got to tell you one more story. Since you're talking about booby traps, I remember one time I was, it was during Tet, and I was in a tank. So we parked a tank, so we were situated. And I come out around the tank and I was checking the suspension system and there was a board there. And I started to kick this board and I brought my foot back and I stopped just like you. I'm not going to touch it. I should never touch it. So I stopped and I said, I'm not going to do that. I put my foot back down and I got a minesweeper and I'll be damned if it wasn't a mine underneath there.
Oh, wow.
Oh yeah. I was really lucky. Hey, I know it did for me. Did war change your, you know, Did it make you grow up?
Oh yeah, yeah. It did. You know, when I came back, you know, I was able to survive a full tour. You had a lot of very close calls with, you know, rounds hitting some of my gear, my canteen, blackjack, and all. But I came home in one piece. And you know, I tried to go to school, and it just seemed like a bunch of kids in there that I couldn't really relate to, and. You know, I began kind of an isolation routine at that time, and my thoughts were different. My views were different, and you know, I kind of looked down on people. Really, you know, I mean, that was not right for me that way. But I just felt that so many of our guys had given so much and were unappreciated by the frivolity that I seem to be going on here with the anti-war movement.
Yeah. I think I told you before, I went through anger issues for about 2 or 3 years. I mean, it didn't take nothing to set me off. We'll probably talk about that later, but it didn't take nothing to set me off. And I was really, just like you, I tried to find where I fit in. Who could I talk to? Who thought them maybe the same way, but who understand exactly what I was going through. Hey, during the prep call, you told me about a particular day in Vietnam, February 8th, 1968. I know that was tough for you to share that with me, but would you mind sharing that with the audience?
All right. So, you know, the Tet hit, I think the 31st of January, and we were rocketed and also fired upon at a small Arvin compound in a place called Phu Lac, which is just south of Air Base Phu Bai. And from there, we would never stop the contact. You know, our first excursion was to go into the Ville to try to rescue a squad that had been on ambush that night. And we found them all dead, just lying in the streets, just blood running down the gutter like rain. And so this got me very angry, got me very... you know, I seen my friends laying there. We picked them up, and put them on. At that time, where the chopper was still able to land, chopper stopped landing a little while after that because of the monsoon. But we went back and we started taking bills one after another. And you see that North Vietnamese flag flying over the bill when you swept in and column. And so many guys were getting hit. And a good friend of mine came in when we got back to the base before we went out to Troy Bridge. It's just a location, a kind of a French fort area, train station in Phu Lac. And we disembarked with 6 bites and began sweep. It was hot. I mean, you just feel it. Because number one, there was nobody around. Houses were empty. People were hiding. And the North Vietnamese were online waiting for us in fixed position, one of the machine guns. And we walked right into an ambush, and the good friend that been with me almost my whole tour, kind of Larry Swanson, the machine gunner, and we kind of signaled to each other with kind of a wink, you know, before we walked through that cane field. In fact, I assigned my rocket gunner, a gunner, because I was carrying laws at the time, and to be with that machine gun to back it up. And man, it was mowed down, and I seen him dead there, you know, and man, I couldn't accept it, you know, and some guys tried to move the body, and I wanted to help, but I couldn't move. I was kind of frozen with my voice. I started firing, bam, bam, bam. I started firing rockets, and then I see the North Vietnamese helmets moving along the line. I knew they were going to move out. So I started loading up my magazine because I fired fell out there, and I got my charger guide and started filling my magazine to continue this fight. And I had straps from the bandoliers were cut into my neck. So I pulled my bandette out and I cut that bandolier strap and kind of pulled it out so I'd get rid of some of that weight. And I said, move out, move out. So I started getting up to move, and I picked up that bandette in my belt and I didn't put it in my sheets. I had my weapon. I got up to that machine gun nest. I could see all the spent rounds where they had ambushed us, and we hopped the fence that they'd been hiding behind and started go up, and I was ready. I had that port arms. I had put my gun on, my rifle on full automatic. I was ready to do it, you know. And so there it was, one wounded laying in the ditch with a Swedish K machine gun. And he started pulling it around over his chest. I could see he was hit, you know, he was hurting his leg. And they started pulling that gun around, and I shoot me with it, and I put my rifle on him. And I expected a burst of automatic fire, but it was bang. One shot. All I had was one in the chamber. The bolt came back. And I looked down, and I go, holy God, you know what? Now I gotta, you know, get my magazine in there. I didn't think I had time. I could just see that butt of that bayonet sticking up. Then I grabbed that bayonet and I jumped on that guy, man. And you know, I pushed that machine gun over his face, I could hear it hit his jaw. And then you know, I just had to stick it, man. And then you know, what I remember is I didn't think the first time I hit a rib or something, I bounced off and make a clean swipe. I had to push harder. And, you know, that guy, I saw his eyes go back, and he threw his last breath right into my face. I could smell his guts, you know, I could smell. It smelled like rice and fish heads, because I'd eaten that myself from Mama's on sometimes on a convoy. I said, that guy, and he, so then after that, I reloaded my weapon and I start trying to pursue the receding forces of the North Vietnamese army. I got myself way out in front, and I didn't realize that we were being pulled from the operation due to being not combat effective. And I found myself out there all alone. I thought, oh my God, I'm going to get captured here. So I hustled back and crawled back and got back, and they're getting on the truck. Said, hey, where you been, man? I said, oh man, I got out there too far, you know. And we went back to, they put us in a, they took us to a, the compound where some of the Seabees had built some hooches, and we were able to rest there and get water and food. And, I tell you, that one really took a toll on me. You know, I had a lot of memories about that. And of course, from there, we barely had a couple of days before we went into Way City for the final assault on Way. And that was the end of my combat. I've been staying in the field to train.
Yeah. You know, it's I don't know about you. The older I get, the more I think about those kind of things. You know, I mean, I don't know what it is. I know what I, like I told before, when I came back, I tried to block all that stuff out. But it in certain times, you'll pop up and you'll remember something that maybe catches you off guard, or say a certain word or something like that that makes something come back to you. Does that happen to you? I mean, maybe someone says something, or you see something that sort of, I don't know, you get a little flashback from things.
Yeah, you know, not too long ago, I was able to go on a raft trip on the Grand Canyon. It was so beautiful and all, and I kind of put a whole war behind me, and then we did a little hike, and we split that hike. We went through some brush, like a little tunnel brush, like we used to, and boom, man, I had a flashback. I was I was in Vietnam right then, man.
Yeah.
And I came out of it, you know, and this guy, hey, what, you all right, man? What happened? You okay? Yeah, I'm fine. But no, that's those things like that can set me off. And, I gotta be careful.
Yeah. I gotta tell you a little funny story. When when I came out of Vietnam, I was a tanker. I was a driver for a lot of time, probably about 9 months in Vietnam. Before I got on this tank, the people got killed on this tank. Everybody got killed but the driver. And I got on that tank, and we got hit. And people on that tank got killed again. And when I left, about a month after I left, everybody got killed but the driver again. So it was, I think sometimes simply by the grace of God that I think I ever got was just a little piece of shrapnel, I think, in the arm there. But it was a little tough. Hey, when you came home, you had to fight a different battle, which is, you know, just like we was talking about a minute about fitting back into society. Was that tough for you?
Yes, it was. I had a real hard time. You know, I came home to my parents' house. They had moved to Santa Barbara at that time, and my brother was a younger kid, and he wanted to get together with me. But when he came in the morning, he had to wake me up with a broomstick because he didn't know how to come out. I had a bayonet under my pillow, you know. I was always dreaming some shit's going to happen, and, you know, patrolling the backyard by myself at night, you know, my parents' house, like, just being outside at night, you know, just being alone out there and listening to sounds. Sometimes I'd feel like that. And, you know, think about things a little bit. And so, yeah, I'm very isolated, you know. I started drinking, just kind of try to go to sleep, but try to put it out of my mind. And that didn't do me any good, of course. So, yeah, it was a struggle.
Yeah. Did it last a long time for you? I know mine, when I struggled, when I came back, it lasted, like I said, a couple of years before I really felt pretty comfortable about being around people. I'm not even sure how I got out of that bad place. And I never went to, I never talked to anybody, or I didn't do anything else. Hey, look, I like to talk some more about that, we need to take a quick break, but first, stay right there. We'll be right back.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. This is Your Next Mission Video Podcast with me, your host, Jack Attilly, 12th Sergeant Major. I mean, if this touches you like it does me, when we talk about the sacrifices of our Vietnam veterans, when we talk about the kind of things they went through, most people have no earthly idea. Nobody understands really what a lot of people of my age and Esteban's age went through for you and for this country. Please like us, click on that subscribe button below, and be sure to click on the bell to receive notifications of all of our upcoming video podcast releases. Together, we can help each other. I'll be right back after a word from our presenting sponsors.
You're watching Your Next Mission Video Podcast, proudly presented by Navy Federal Credit Union, the most trusted credit union owned by members of the military community, serving all branches of the armed forces and their families. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Their members are the mission. Purdue Global. You're ready for a comeback, and with Purdue Global, you can do more than take classes. You can take charge of your story, of your career, of your life. Earn a degree you can be proud of and get an education employers respect. Start your comeback at PurdueGlobal.edu. And USAA.
A century ago, our founders made a promise to always take care of their own. That promise is still at the heart of everything we do and why our members know we'll do what's right. Because at USAA, we take care of our own.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilly.
Welcome back. We're talking with lawyer and Vietnam veteran, Esteban Valenzuela. Before we get back to our discussion, I want to let you know about a way to support what we're doing here on behalf of our veterans and their families here at the American Freedom Foundation. If you have a used vehicle you're planning on getting rid of, or some property you don't have any plans for, you can donate it. Visit our website at AmericanFreedomFoundation.org/donate and click on that vehicle donation button or that home donation button to support our work. We really would appreciate your support. Esteban, let's talk more about how hard it was to fit back into your community when you got back from Vietnam. We talked about it briefly there for a few minutes, but I want to tell you about myself. I told you before, it took me 2 to 3 years to fit back in. And I had anger issues and I just a lot of crazy, crazy things that luckily I either didn't kill myself or kill somebody else. Did you go through anything like that?
Well, yes, I did. Well, especially in first coming home, you know. I armed myself up, you know, I carried a pistol and a knife, and I got myself a motorcycle, and I started letting my hair grow and the beard grow and riding around looking for trouble and looking for a fight. You know, somebody say something, I took offense. If I heard some guy laugh at a bar, I said, "What you laughing at?" You know, I mean, I was just, I don't think they knew how close they were to being killed, you know, and I would leave, you know, and isolate, you know. It was pretty painful, but
Did you deal with any drugs or anything like that? Did alcohol, a lot of alcohol and drinking, I guess, back in the day?
I grew up in alcohol, yeah. Well, when I found out that there were drugs that could make you drink more, I used those, you know.
Yeah.
You know, what helped me, though, was this high school girl started writing to me when I was in Vietnam. She wasn't my girlfriend, but she wanted to write to, I guess, a soldier idea, and she kind of got out of the blue. I got these letters because I didn't have anybody writing to me except my folks now and then. And so I created this romance in my head, you know, about coming home. And she did meet me at the LA airport after I got out of San Francisco, came in through Travis Air Force Base. I went down to LAX. And of course, you know, first thing she did, it took me out to her college campus. Like, oh my God, man, I'm in my uniform tomorrow. And I'm walking around there with these, I call them this hippie movement, you know, this peace, love, dove people. And, but I was very unsteady in those crowds, very uncomfortable. And, you know, for quite a few months, kind of living like that. Until she got pregnant, and I said, holy cow, I'm gonna have a baby. I got no money. Got to get a real job, you know, working at hotels for tips, all cash, kind of partying with this night crew. And I applied and I got hired by the Santa Barbara City Fire Department. And that saved my life. Got me off the street. I shaved, cut my hair, got in a uniform. Stood at attention, said the Pledge of Allegiance. I said, I can do this, you know, I can do this. And, but I started having, you know, clashes with some of the other firemen, especially the Navy.
No, I understand. I got you.
And so there was some Marine Corps veterans that were firemen there. They're Korean War veterans. And they said, hey, Esteban, man, you stay away from those guys, man. You come over and you have coffee with us. We're going to help you. You're a Marine. We're Marine. We're all Marines. We're all green, man. We're all green. And so they did help me. And I passed all my tests as a first year probationary firefighter. And I got assigned to be the assistant to the fire marshal. And went out on his fire investigations for origin investigations for incendiary type of fires, intentional set. I met with the city attorney and I got interested in law right there. And I asked the fire marshal, I said, how do I go forward? How do I move forward? He said, well, you got to go to college, son. You got to get your BA. And so that sparked me. And I think that began my recovery right there.
Yeah. Hey, you know, it's it only takes one person to reach out to you and help you a little bit. Sometimes it, you know, a word, a pat on the back, sometimes a kick in the backside there, whatever it takes, though. But you need somebody to tell your story to so they understand exactly what's going on with you personally. And it's tough. And that's what I said before. A lot of people, when you're talking about those kind of things, don't understand. And they don't understand the kind of things you've seen or had to go through. Hey, there's so many people out there that are struggling when they come back from war, just like me and you. Was there a point in time where you considered maybe taking your own life?
Well, I hate to admit it, but yeah, I did. Yeah, I kind of, at some points, it just seemed like things weren't getting any better, you know. Of course, that first marriage ended relatively soon. I had those two girls in that marriage. I had the child court problems. You know, things weren't working out, and it just seemed like, you know what, the easy way is out, man. And so I kind of made up a plan, but I didn't execute it, obviously. And that was a pretty depressing time. Spend that cylinder on that feature 7 Magnum and see what number comes up, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I got you. You know, I always tell everybody, you're not alone. Everybody struggles. Everybody in this world struggles. And so the people that are listening here today, don't think that you're by yourself. If you're dealing with some issues, reach out and talk to somebody. Did you reach out to talk to anybody or ask for help? I know you talked about the fire pit and the guys in the fire department. Anybody else?
You know, I got involved with a group here, veterans here in Santa Maria, where I have my law office now, Santa Maria, California. And some of those guys were Vietnam veterans, obviously, and we get together and they say, Esteban, you got to get some help, bro. You got to reach out. You know, you can't do this on your own. They kind of sent me up to what they call here in San Francisco, the Veterans Center. And I was very apprehensive about it, you know, as I'm not sharing nothing, I'm not admitting nothing, you know, and I had a very chip on my shoulder kind of attitude. And I went in there and I met this counselor. Number one, she was a woman, so I knew she couldn't help me, you know what I mean? And then I found out she was a combat vet from the Desert Wars and had been under fire herself. And I don't know, man, she worked some voodoo on me or something, man, because I started opening up and doing the program, and they called it some kind of a CBT. I don't know what exactly it stood for, some kind of training of the mind to think differently about things. And I spent quite a few months in therapy with her, and I was able to come to a peace, you know, with a lot of that.
Yeah.
Well, to face it without shoving it down, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was just going to ask you, Curtis, was there a particular key point or a particular person in the group that people helped you turn things around? So she really helped you turn those things around, I guess.
She did, and I would recommend to anybody out there suffering with their demons is to reach out and get some help.
Yeah. Hey, all these years later, after building going from fire department to a lawyer, that seems a little unusual to me, but it's a pretty good step. But all these years later, after building a successful law practice and a family, you went back to Vietnam. I would have loved to win. You went back to Vietnam with Veterans United, I guess, took you back over to the Welcome Home Vietnam Veterans Tour. And it's what a wonderful thing to do. But was that like for you? I mean, did you enjoy going back? I mean, was that something you wanted to do?
As I look back on it now, I say that was one of the most important events in my life. At first, I was apprehensive about it, you know, circumspect, what's going to happen. But, you know, it wasn't a tourist trip. It was a veterans trip. And all the guys I went with, there was 10 of us all together, all had different stories of what had come down for us at our battle site, so to speak.
And they all was in different services too, wasn't they? They was all from different services.
We had Army Special Forces guys. We had aviation bomber pilots, jet pilots. We had helicopter pilots. We had other Marine Corps infantry, Army infantry guys, Navy. We had a Navy officer, not an officer, an enlisted man with us. He was interesting because he had kind of felt that he didn't qualify because he'd only fired artillery into Vietnam and hadn't gone up to the jungles or anything like we did. I told him, no, that's BS, man. You're a Vietnam veteran. You get over here, man. We're all together. So hearing these stories from the guys that had been there and telling their stories at the places they were at, bringing things to life again and seeing the people and they took me to one of my battle sites south of Vietnam, and man, there was a Vietnam woman there with a kind of wearing the old tile style garb with a Vietnam hat, and she had a water buffalo with her. Man, it took me way back, man. And I was able to tell my story. And when they took us to these monuments that the Vietnamese army has now built to the Viet Cong, I thought I would be resentful, but in fact, it was the opposite. I felt some compassion for their loss, which I thought I would never feel.
Yeah. I think when you do something like it, it's part of therapy. I mean, it gives you closure on things you did. I mean, because just like you talked about on February 8, 1968, the things that you had to do for our country, and they asked you to do, it's a way to get closure on those things. And some of them's really tough, and some of them, you need that. You need to go back and see those things. And I fault nobody from Vietnam. I fault the Viet Cong or whatever. That was just a job I had to do, and I did it the best I could. So, you did it the best you could also. So, hey, we need to take one more break. When we come back, let's talk about Memorial Day and what it means to you and to our country. So stay right there, Esteban. I'll be right back, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Now, here's a word from one more of the organizations that helped make this show possible.
You're watching Your Next Mission video podcast, brought to you in part by Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Dental, Blue Cross Blue Shield FEP Vision.
Quality insurance will set you up for the rest of your life. And I think that's what Blue Cross and Blue Shield has demonstrated for decades.
It adds to your longevity of life because we want to be there for our loved ones. We want to be there for our family.
Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're blessed to be here today with the Vietnam veteran, Esteban Valenzuela, where together we are recognizing Memorial Day. Remember, this is your show. We know there's so many issues that directly affect you, and we want to address each and every one of them. So please, let me know what you'd like us to cover. You can leave me a message at 844-424-1134 or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. And guess what? I'll reach back out to you. Esteban, given all you've lived through, I should say all of us, we've lived through, what does Memorial Day mean to you, and how do you recognize it?
Well, it's been a transition over the years. You know, in the early years of returning to Vietnam, Memorial Day was a dark day for me. You know, when the war was still going on. I came home in 68, and the war didn't end until 75. But even later, Memorial Day would be a dark day. I would feel depressed. I'd feel isolated. I'd kind of go out in the woods, kind of recreate an atmosphere of wilderness. And I took, of course, maybe some whiskey with me, some shot glasses, and I'd set them up for me and for my buddy Larry, who got machine gunned down, and for my A-gunner, Chaplain, and for a couple other guys. And I'm drinking with the dead, you know. I'd isolated from my family and remembered, you know, and felt a lot of anger, resentment for the way Vietnam veterans were treated when they got home. And, you know, it was just a kind of destructive thinking. But as time went on, you know, I came out of my shell, so to speak, and got involved with veterans groups, Vietnam veterans, and another group I'm involved in, the American GI Forum, Hispanic Family Veterans Group. I'm the current commander of the Santa Maria chapter of that. You know, so I participate in events now. You know, I go to the cemetery where they have honor of the veterans. I go to some of the clubs that have called mini stand downs honoring veterans. The Elks Club here is one. And now I don't drink no more because it never did me any good. And so Today, it's kind of family. You know, I just appreciate that I did survive, that I have recovered, that I didn't kill myself after the war, that I have been able to be some successful in my business and try to get into an attitude of gratitude and enjoy grandchildren that I now have, and they never called me those dark states. And just appreciate this country and appreciate all the men and women that have fought and many died for our freedom. And so today, my honor, Memorial Day, and I kind of look forward to it. And today is kind of a day to be with family.
Do you tell your story to a lot of people?
No.
How come?
I don't know. You know, I'm a little, I don't know what the word is. I'm not ashamed, but I'm not sure anybody that hasn't been in combat will understand what it was like to be there and what the mental states we can reach to take life like that and think nothing of it. You know, I mean, when I came home, human life had no value in my mind. And it took time to appreciate humanity again. And this last trip to Vietnam with these brothers really brought that home. And so very grateful today.
I remember, I've told this story a bunch. I remember one time I was there in Tet, separate all everybody's and doing some things. But I remember one time I was going down a road, and I've told this a lot in the show, where I was in a tank, a cavalry troop, and was going down the road, and I looked to the left, and this guy got electrocuted and fell out of a telephone pole. And obviously, I guess he was dead, but I looked at the guys in front of me, and I guess they looked over there and just looked back. It was like it was nothing. And that's going back to what you just said. You get hard, and I tell people my heart turned black, and I didn't look at death the same way. And I just, all I cared about was survival. You know, you want to make sure that you make it through these kind of things. So that's tough. And I said it before, it took me probably 2 to 3 years to get out of that dark place. So it's a lot of guys like that out there, a lot of people, men and women, that suffer through war. I think any veteran can identify with the feelings that you have on Memorial Day. What about those who really have never served? What do you hope that they'll get out of Memorial Day?
Well, I just hope that they appreciate the life they have and the benefits that they enjoy as being an American with all that we have in this country. That has been a result of sacrifice of others, and appreciate have some appreciation for the sacrifice of veterans, in some way show that.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, that goes back to really what I'd said before. You've got to tell your story, because a lot of people that, you know, 1% of this country serve in the military. So if you go out and tell your story, at least they'll understand. Tell your kids or whatever. But more guys like us need to get out and tell people about. And what war is really like. I tell people all the time, most people only understand war by watching movies, by the word of mouth, or listening to radio. Have no earthly idea about what really goes on in war. So it's tough. You know, first of all, let me tell you, this has been a great discussion, and I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your time in Vietnam with us. Any final thoughts, maybe anything you want to share with the audience before we stop here?
No, just reach out to veterans, man, and keep the faith, man, and don't isolate. Get help. Don't drink.
Yeah, that's not good. That's for sure.
Stay out of jail. Those are things I seem to get involved with. You know, when I start behaving the way. You know, when my mind was crazy, I was just, I didn't care anymore. And I'd hate to see anybody go through that. You know, a lot of work is being done for veterans now with Veterans Court and Second Chance and things that I work with now as a lawyer to help veterans. So keep the faith, brothers.
Well, I appreciate it. Well, now that I've got a veteran back with us, you know, that's a lawyer, so maybe I got a little help here if I struggle in it. I just want to tell you, welcome on, brother. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming on the show. Thanks again to Esteban Venezuela for being with us. I'm Jack Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, and you've been enjoying Your Next Mission video podcast, and thank you for joining us. Log on our website at yournextmission.org and check out our job board in partnership with Recruit Military and Opline, where you can create your own personal profile that will match you with just the right job real time. You can follow me on my personal social media pages, Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn. And if you appreciate what we're doing with Your Next Mission, please click on that subscribe button below. And don't forget to click on the bell too to receive notifications about our upcoming video podcast. Together we can help each other. Remember, we want to hear from you. Please leave me a message at 844-424-1134 or send me an email at smatelly@yournextmission.org. Thanks again to Esteban for joining us today. You talk about Vietnam and you talk about the sacrifices that Vietnam veterans go through, and you talk about Memorial Day, and you talk about looking back at maybe at what you've seen and what you had to go through. People that went through Vietnam suffered a great deal. Just think about it. Think about the kind of sacrifices that they made for our country that we sometimes just forget. The majority of people that died in Vietnam were 18 to 24. We killed off a generations of young men that fought for us, that fought for you, that wanted to do everything they could to make our life better. And when they come home, they struggled and they tried to fit in. So when you think about Memorial Day, think about them. Think about all those veterans that sacrifice for us, that fight for us, that die for us. Thanks for watching, and thanks to Bungalow Studios, and of course, our sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue Global, USAA, and Blue Cross Blue Shield FEB Dental, and Blue Cross Blue Shield FEB Vision. We appreciate all you do for our military. And as always, see you on the high ground. Hooah!
You've been listening to Your Next Mission, brought to you by the American Freedom Foundation. Learn more by visiting yournextmission.org.